It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And it is July the 3rd, so a slightly preliminary Happy Independence Day to everybody out there. Don't you love listening to a radio station where the Saturday morning crew, even on a holiday weekend, is right here in the studio, just live and current?
I do.
Raring to go.
Yep, so, we're here and others aren't.
That's correct. Now, you could probably count on that and put it in the bank in some places.
Although Angela and Howard were live, we just saw them.
Yeah, well, and Joe was too, because he's in town. I'm sure he was there. And anyway, the reason we're here, like always, is because all of you out there are regular listeners. We thank you profusely over and over. And if you're new to the show, maybe you're in town or somebody told you about it or we begged you to listen or whatever causes people to tune it in, try to stick around for the hour. I'm sure you'll have a reasonably good time and I'll guarantee you'll learn something, no matter how useful or useless, but you know, everybody takes something away from it. I do want to bring up that I am so pleased, this being a financial show, we have all a big celebration tomorrow because our little backyard cookout is going to cost 16 cents less than it did last year, according to the White House yesterday. And they're very, very proud of this.
Wait, and what is cheaper?
Nathan's hot dogs or whatever they were, okay. Apparently are down a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Now, don't drive anywhere
right
to do that, or you're going to blow it all. But I, being the financial wizard that I am, you can imagine, I have a plan.
You're not going to drive anywhere?
That's part A of the plan. But part B is I'm going to invite some other people over so I can save 32 cents.
Ah.
See?
Genius.
I know. 100% return on that one. All right. A little facetiousness goes a long ways on the radio. I understand. Let's see. Today, we have all kinds of topics. And one of the things I want to touch on is Social Security claiming and the effects that some of the stuff we've been through in the last year and a half have. So right after the break, I'll have a trivia question based on that. It was a big week for financial news. Always is when you have jobs week. And this one was a real doozy.
It was.
But let's start with the actual market because something has happened that I don't think I have ever seen before. I don't know if it's happened before. It probably has, but not in my lifetime of paying attention. All five trading days this week, the S&P 500 set a new record.
It gets better than that.
It's actually longer than that.
Seven consecutive days in a row set a new record on the S&P, and this hasn't happened since 1997.
Okay, so I'd got into the business in 01, so I'm right. It wasn't during the time that I've been having to pay attention to the little details like this. But it's been a long time.
Yeah, it really has. And it's makes you a little nervous sometimes. But there's a lot of things that propelled that market to do that. And one of them was the very strong jobs report. Actually, two very strong jobs reports. The ADP report was really good as well. The unemployment rate ticked up slightly, but that was because more people came back into the workforce. And so that's actually a good thing in this regard, because we need more people in the workforce right now. If you talk to any business owner, they can't find people. So the more people that get back in, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
After we get through all the headline versions of all this and the market and everything, I do have a couple of little observations that are unusual that I have not. As of all the time this morning I spent studying for this, come to a conclusion as to what they mean. So I'm just going to lay them out and we'll see.
Okay. One interesting thing is that tech shares led the way higher for a second week in the row, continuing the trend reversal from earlier this year. Healthcare, communication services, and consumer goods also had strong weeks, while energy, utilities, financials, and real estate all lagged the rest of the market. So this is pretty much the opposite of the first half of the year. And that's a trend we've seen now for a few weeks where the things that were hot are not hot and the things that were not hot are hot. So just goes to show you, own everything, diversify, and that's the only way to make any money.
A lot of people think that semiconductors are a pretty good harbinger of things to come. They had been particularly weak throughout the spring.
After a really, really good run, though.
And this week, they just took off again.
Yep.
So whatever people were fearing or playing caution for, I don't know. But the semis are hot, and that's usually a pretty good sign for the market, at least for a while.
It is. Well, a few sectors trended back into overbought and extreme overbought territory this week. The long-term bull market is still in place, and we have a very accommodative Federal Reserve. So even if we see a short-term pullback off of these all-time highs, the trend is your friend right now. Earnings season is right around the corner with the start of Q3, which happened this week, and we expect to see another good earnings season. The pandemic is nearing an end. There's a ton of pent-up demand. Federal stimulus programs have left consumers loaded with cash, and almost everyone who wants to work is working, and even potentially finding a better paying job than they had before the pandemic right now. There are a whole lot of tailwinds for this market. I expect this economy to continue in high gear for at least the rest of this year, if not well into next year.
Yeah, they'll find a way to goof it up eventually.
It's possible. Probable, I should say. But I don't think in the short term there's much they could do to stymie it. For the week, we saw all three indexes gain more than 1%. The NASDAQ led the way higher at 1.9%. NASDAQ actually outperformed in the second quarter, too, gaining almost 10%. The S&P had a pretty solid quarter, though, tacking on just over 8%, and the Dow was up just under 5%. For the year, all three indexes are now up more than 13%. If your diversified portfolio isn't up that much this year, don't be surprised. Bonds have not had the same run that stocks have had this year. In fact, AGG, the ETF that tracks the aggregate bond index, is down 1.5% this year. It trended up in the second quarter, but it had to overcome a drop of almost 4% in the first quarter. So if you have a 60-40 stock bond portfolio using SPY and AGG, you would be up over 9% this year, but nowhere near the almost 16% that SPY is up alone this year.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for sometimes.
Yeah, it's sometimes you trade a little bit of that all-stock performance to mitigate your risk, and there is risk in this market. Just because we're bullish on the market doesn't mean that risks don't exist, because they definitely do. If you were worried that investor sentiment wasn't rising with the market, don't be. Bullish sentiment jumped higher again this week, with almost half of investors reporting bullish, which is a pretty historically high number. Unfortunately, investors tend to get it wrong, and this could be a warning of a rough patch ahead. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but typically when you see bullish numbers like this, it's not a great sign. Personal income took a step back in June, declining 2% as some government programs have been ending. However, the 2% was a smaller drop than the 2.5% that was expected, and despite the drop, wages continue to rise and personal income is up 2.8% from a year ago, so not too bad. And I want to talk about the jobs numbers, but let's do that after the break.
Yeah, and then we did have some inflation numbers come out, too, and they're really trying hard. If you listen to all the financial media and the politicians and so on, they're trying very hard to convince us this is transitory.
Some of it is. Used auto prices, for example, inflation number.
Up 29%.
Yeah, it's insane.
They're
not going to
hold that. No.
No.
What we need to do is get the supply chains going so that all of the newly produced vehicles can get out into the market, and that will take all the used cars down. That is definitely transitory. But the things that aren't are wage increases, and the wage increases are looking pretty solid right now, and I don't think it's going to change for a while, but that's down the line. All right, we've got to take a break for a second. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. This is about Social Security. It probably wouldn't come to as a surprise to most people to say that people are rethinking their Social Security claiming strategies. And it has actually shifted somewhat what people are doing. So since the start of COVID, what's happened is 11% of the people who are turning old enough to decide when to take it, which means 62 is the first time you can really consider it. 11% said that because of COVID, they're going to claim later. Some percent, which I can't tell you because then you could derive the answer, say it hasn't changed a thing. But what percent say they're going to file earlier due to COVID? It's a whole number, less than 100. And it's actually less than 89 because 100 minus the 11 that are doing later leaves you 89. So it's just a percentage number. And as always, there's darn good reason why I'm going to talk about it.
Okay.
All righty. All right, back to jobs and markets and all that stuff a little bit. There was an interesting number. I was telling Adam in the break, you know that the government survey, is the big one, the headline survey as we call it, is an establishment survey where they call select businesses over and over and see what they're doing, and then they extrapolate from there. But there's another one where they call households, and that, strangely enough, they hit it there in the category of household survey. But the household survey showed a negative 18,000 jobs. So this makes one go, ADP, private payrolls, up 692,000 or some such a number like that. The government establishment survey, up 850,000. And the same survey people at the government, minus 18,000. So we were speculating because I said before the break, I don't really have a hard and fast reasoning, I guess, behind it. But we came to the conclusion part of it has to do with what month it is, because kids get out of school and a lot of kids hit the workforce and so on. So the seasonal adjustment on that minus 18,000, that's where the key lies here, because the seasonal adjustment took away 1,148,000. June is such a big hiring month normally that this year was no different, but when they seasonally adjust the number, it looks pathetic. But actually, if you add them all up as we were doing and rounding out some little rough edges, yeah, seems like pretty good.
Yeah.
The number of unemployed people did go up. That's why we have a higher unemployment rate, but it's because so many people entered the workforce.
Yeah, and it's a good thing. That's a good thing. That means that's usually the sign of a very strong jobs or economy, because people who have exited the workforce probably exited because they couldn't find anything. And so if they think that they can then find a job, they will come back in, and that's a sign of a strong economy.
Yeah, the only other thing that I thought was kind of curious in here is that the long-term unemployed, 27 weeks and out, rose sharply. People, go back to work.
It's time.
But, you know, we've been talking for a long time, and everybody else has been talking a long time how many states are getting together, and they're eliminating that extra $300 a week that people are getting for federal unemployment benefits. Well, a lot of states did end it in June. But most of them didn't end until the 26th of June. These numbers cut off at the middle of June.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be some dramatic shifts in what you see over the next couple of jobs dates, which will be early August and early September because of their cutoff dates. But you kind of have to chuckle when you see some of this.
And one interesting thing in this report, too, was that government jobs rose 188,000. And it kind of makes you wonder, where did all those people go back to work in the government? Well, they were almost all accounted for by schools rehiring people to get ready to open in the fall. So that's actually good news.
And probably a lot of people that are in there doing, you know, I've done a lot of work with the custodial staffs at schools and things like that. And when they get the summer to start fixing up the school for opening in the fall, it was always quite a chore.
Yeah.
Imagine it in the age of
double.
COVID.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be really interesting. But you remember last week, we're talking about the strange case of Peter Thiel's $5 billion Roth IRA, which is larger than mine.
It's
last time I looked.
Slightly larger than mine as well.
In fact,
it's slightly larger than any I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I've seen Roth IRAs with a couple hundred thousand in them, but because of the limits of the amount of money you can place in historically into a Roth IRA has been pretty low. And then that combined with it's pretty easy to hit the income limit where you can't contribute to an IRA, and you can't even do a backdoor if you have a regular IRA. Well, you can, but it costs you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So there just isn't – most people can't get enough money in to get to those kind of levels. So,
well, they're as usual, you know – we've talked about this for years, and people who've been listening for years know that when someone perceives a problem And believe me, some people are perceiving a problem with Peter Thiel's Roth IRA.
Yeah, and most of them are currently residing in Washington.
Yes, and some on the left coast and so on. But the government has this irresistible urge to, quote,
gotta do something.
Do something.
Gotta do something.
Yep. And I first want to bring up an example, and I didn't do it in my publications on these things, but since we're talking to a local audience right now from Florida, and most people remember what happened. If you remember the name Terry Schiavo?
Of course.
That case got so overheated, and then the government got their bug in their butt again and said, we have to do something. Mm-hmm. Remember, they called the legislature back into special session in Washington, D.C. to pass a law for one person. Never, ever pass a law for one person or a small handful of people or because of your undeniable jealousy or anything else. That was a complete and abject disaster. Well, guess what they're talking about now with Peter Thiel?
Of course. Uh-huh. And the problem is not what they do to Peter Thiel, which inevitably they're going to get they're going to tax that money somehow. They're going to.
He won't live forever.
But that's not the problem. I don't care about Peter Thiel because Peter Thiel has plenty of money. It doesn't matter to him. The problem is that it's going to trickle down. It's going to hit all of us. And you don't know how it's coming, but it's coming.
Well, let me make some suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
Where I have to... I'm drying the ink on this. It came in just as I was leaving the house from the Wall Street Journal. Sure enough.
I saw that, yeah.
The things that we were talking about before, now they're talking about them. So let's go back a little bit. What did Peter Thiel do? Well, first off, he made a Roth contribution. Well, we know one thing. Back then, you could only have an income of, I don't know what it was exactly back then, it's about $140,000 now. So let's say under $100,000. Or you couldn't make a Roth deposit. Now, Peter Thiel made a Roth deposit of $2,000, which means he had a low income. So what did he do in there? He bought 1.7 million shares of a little company that he started up, and he paid 0.001 or tenth of a cent per share, about $1,760. Well, that particular company became very successful, became known as PayPal, and sold out a bunch, and today it's worth $5 billion, and it's in a tax-free Roth IRA. Now, my Roth IRA is tax-free, and your Roth IRA is tax-free, and everybody who's listening that has one is tax-free. So do you think we should tax Peter Thiel? No, I don't think so, because if you can tax that one, you can tax mine.
Exactly.
And that's been something that we've been worrying about for a couple of decades. But, of course, let's not stop there. Let's say now that there are some idiots. Hear that, Senator Wyden? And this is funny because I've been on Wyden's side for the first time in my life on a couple of things he's doing under the SECURE Act. He was a big mover and shaker in that, and I really love what they did with it. So I've been giving him accolades for a year and a half or better now. But he's right back in form now.
Of course.
Yeah. We think, he and the others in his posse, we think that we should limit the amount of money that an IRA can reach, a Roth IRA. Maybe $3.4 million just to pull a number out of someplace the sun isn't shining today. And so after that, you could no longer put any in, and every year you have to remove the growth from it so it never exceeds $3.4 million. The money would, as it sits right now, come out tax-free. So what they're actually proposing here is a required minimum distribution plan for Roth IRAs based on their size, not on your age. So if you got a big hit in yours and you were 25 years old, for instance, and you got up to $3.5 million, you would have to start RMDs on your Roth IRA. Now, RMDs on a Roth IRA is an oxymoron. That is one of the reasons that Roth IRAs are so popular. That is not the only thing that they're looking to do. They're looking to completely eliminate The backdoor rock.
Of course.
Yeah. Now, how many clients do we have who use backdoor Roth IRAs?
Five.
At least. And
maybe.
And I mean, the two of us.
It's not that common.
No, it's not that common. And that's just one of them. Again, it's not that common, but the people who do it as a great tax planning technique.
Yeah, it's for sure.
Very important. I gotta save the killer till right after the break. Don't go anywhere. Right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I remind everybody that lines are open. If you want to give us a call, you immediately go to the front of the line. Number is 904-222-8255. The trivia question is open. COVID has changed people's plans for claiming Social Security, with 11% saying that they plan to claim benefits later because of COVID. What percentage say they're going to start earlier because of COVID? Now, I want to wrap up a little bit on the Peter Thiel and the reactionary people who I have dubbed as sanctimonious, because the fervor of what they're doing is practically a religion to them when they see and perceive a problem that they can do something about. And the people who are affected are completely innocent of anything, and it happens this way over and over. It is so predictable. Now, I did misspeak a moment ago. The widened limit would be $5 million, and the 3.4 was an Obama era, but it was attached to everything. You couldn't put money in a 401k, a 403b, or anything else once you hit $3.4 million in retirement
savings. I remember that.
Yeah. And you know what that means down the line for people in your generation even?
I mean, that number is going to be less and less money every year.
It is.
Especially at the rate of inflation today.
Absolutely. So, sorry, I stand corrected on that one. But the restrictions on size and so on are one thing. The restrictions on contributions are yet another thing. But here's the kicker. I promised. First, I'll slip in a little one. I like the suspense. All right, Dave. Current law, this is the article that was written. I'm going to read it to you one sentence here, because it's a little bit, let's just say, sugar-coated. Current law allows both traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs to be invested in a wide variety of assets, including real estate, non-public stock, cryptocurrency, or a sports franchise. Collectibles such as rugs or gems aren't allowed. That's true, but you got to go through hoops to buy some of this stuff.
You do, but there are custodians that will help you.
And it costs you a lot of money.
Yeah.
But that allowed Peter Thiel to buy this non-traded stock. So perfectly legal, according to IRS. Says so right here. But here's the kicker. Wyden, you hear that name again over and over, wants to eliminate Roth IRA conversions.
No.
Yes. One of the most important tax strategies that has been encouraged since they made it up, which is about as long as I've been in this business, one of the current strategies for people who are getting close to retiring is to start paying some taxes now, thinking the rates will be lower now than they will be at retirement, and to convert all or part of IRAs over to Roth IRAs, which is, in essence, just a kind of a broader look at the one we were talking about with the backdoor Roth. But this involves taking money out of a tax-deferred IRA, paying the taxes now, sticking it in the Roth so that it will always be tax-deferred. Well, he wants to eliminate that for the reason that, darned if I can think of one.
To punish someone?
We're just afraid the account's going to get too big.
Yeah.
And then he forces you to take it out.
Politicians are supposed to do things that help their constituents.
Yeah.
This does none of that. This solely exists to punish one person for being really successful in his Roth IRA. That's ridiculous.
It is absolutely beyond my comprehension what goes through these people's minds except jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you react on jealousy, it's going to hurt a lot of people financially. And that, of course, is what we care about.
I wonder if it has anything to do with Peter Thiel being a libertarian Republican type.
Gay Republican libertarian.
Yeah.
It It widens the jealousy factor, I think.
Perhaps.
But I don't think in the way people think inside the Beltway, it really changes all that much.
No, it's probably true.
That's just a guess. All right, well, those of you who've been listening to me for decades, way back when in a different time in a different place, we got talking about something called a smart thermostat. Remember those?
I remember you talking about them.
It was maybe 15 years ago that these things really started to take hold. And the idea of a smart thermostat could be sold on various things. There's the smart ones that learn when you're home and when you're not home, so you don't have to turn up or down the heat in the morning or night or whatever. Yeah. That is a programmable thermostat, but it is not actually a smart thermostat. A smart thermostat talks to the provider through the internet. Not only that, it allows its controls to be taken care of from other places. So remember the big deal in Texas here earlier this year with the storm and the power outages and so on. And the biggest outcome of that, I guess, is that the smart thermostat people decided they were going to execute their plans. So this is Texas today only. But I'm telling you, where Texas is, we're all going. So if you have a thermostat, the ones in Texas, Energy Hub is what they call it in Texas. But if they find on your system, either because they put it in or you did, one by Nest, is it pronounced Ecobee?
I think so.
Emerson, Honeywell Home, Lux, Alarm.com, Building 36, Radio Thermostat, or Vivint, or whatever. If you have any of those, they can control it from the office. So people in Texas are waking up now in the middle of the night with their house at 78, 80, 82. There was one example of people with a very young baby who was getting overheated, and they have the authorization to do this because of some tiny little print that nobody ever reads. But when we got wind of this back 15 years ago or so, and I did a few radio shows that were on that, we had a form letter that anybody could access, and you could fill it out and send it to your energy company, JEA or Beaches or whatever, and you could expressly deny them the ability to come in and replace a thermostat or to control one that's in there. Water companies can do the same thing, too, but it's a lot more dangerous when they're starting to control your appliances and your home heat and cool. So if anybody's interested in that, shoot us an email at the company website, and I'll give you the raw form of the letter. I don't know exactly how strong it would be from a legal standpoint, but if you're on record to them as saying, you do not have my authorization now, nor will you ever have it, to put a smart thermostat in my home, I couldn't recommend it any more highly.
Remember Robinhood, the trading app?
Yeah. I shoot an arrow off. Oh, no, that was William Tell.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't gotten as much press lately. But this week, they were all over the news for a number of reasons. So they got slapped with a big fine, $70 million.
That's a big fine.
Encouraging risky trading procedures for people who were not qualified to do such things.
I think that was an all-time record fine, wasn't it?
I believe it was. I think it was. Yeah. Well, they took that, and the very next day they filed for an IPO, and they settled with the young man's family who committed suicide, right, after seeing a negative cash balance of $730,000 in his account.
Which wasn't true.
No, it was a temporary thing, actually. Mm-hmm. He had been using some really risky option strategies that I don't know if he was qualified or not qualified to do, but he saw that and committed suicide. Very, very sad story. Alexander Kearns was the name, but they settled with his family. So they had a really big week, and it looks like they are going to be going public here before too long. Not all good news this week to announce an IPO on, but they're going to go forward with it anyway.
Well, I got to say one thing for them. They have certainly made a name for themselves.
Yeah. They say all news is good news, or all press is good press, I guess.
Yeah, but the Mae West theory of life. There is no bad publicity.
Yeah.
Well, if there were any, they got it this week.
They really did. So I'll be curious if they start crafting a different image between now and IPO time.
But, you know, the problem with them, we've been talking about it since their name started to be prominent. It is very simple. They allow, and by allowing, I would say encourage, young people who are really not qualified to get involved in options to do so. If you try to do options with us, you got to go through a lot of rigmarole.
Yeah.
It's just too risky for most people. We'll see how it goes. All right, don't go anywhere. One more break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. And trivia questions still out there. 11% of the people that are thinking about claiming Social Security benefits are actually planning to take them later because of COVID. What percentage are looking to take them earlier? And I wanted to bring up one more thing. I read with interest yesterday morning. It had to do with labor markets and so on. And it said the biggest factor holding back a labor market recovery. Well, I've read, probably everybody has, half a dozen of those stories, and I say, well, it's not that $300 a week thing. That has nothing to do with this and that and the other thing. It's all about COVID. Well, there is another factor, and it's a big one. And this guy made a really good point, so I give them credit where and when it's due. Doesn't happen often, in my opinion, but hey. The number of retirements is really large and probably has been accelerated by COVID because some of them weren't voluntary, frankly. But out of the 3.5 million drop in the labor force, it can be 3.5 million out of the drop can be attributed to retirements, and the net of that is almost 2 million. We're not replacing the retiring generation very fast, which makes sense because of what we've talked about so often. Your generation and our generation are different sizes.
Baby boomers are similar to the middle generation right now,
it's going to take a while for that to catch up. You got to get all the younger people employed.
Yeah, it's my generation, the 40 to 55 year olds right now that are the tiny generation, Gen X.
We need more people in the labor market. And until the young people are getting there, which, again, goes back probably partly to the $300. They weren't making that much money, so the $300 puts them over the top, and why go to work? Plus, they don't have the same work ethic that people your age and up would have.
Potentially.
But I thought it was interesting, though, because nobody talks about it. But I remember several times in the past since we've been doing the show that one of the things that we've always looked at, but once in a while talked about it, is the impact of retirements, because 10,000 to 12 or even 13,000 people my age are turning 65, 66, 67, and a lot of them are going to retire, accelerated, as I said, probably by COVID. So just something that I thought was interesting.
I wonder how this hot job market will help people decide if they're going to unretire, though. I bet there's a little bit of that going on.
I wonder with your Social Security claiming strategy, if people know that if you have taken your benefits and under a year later you're thinking, market's looking pretty good, maybe I should stop and go back to work, that you're allowed to pay it all back and it's as if it never happened. So you'd make 8% more, but it's only available once and it's only available for 1 year after your first benefit. So some things to think about in Social Security planning strategy. We'll get to that with the answer to the trivia. Meanwhile, you think you need a financial advisor, or do you think one would do you any good? We have some questions.
Yeah, so I found this article, and I was expecting it to be terrible, because these things usually are.
Yep.
But it was actually written, and it was called, Do I Need to Hire a Financial Planner? And these are six questions you can ask yourself that will help you determine whether or not you may need a financial advisor. And it was actually really good. So I thought I'd share them. The first one was, do I need help with financial planning, or am I just looking for stock tips? Because if you're looking for stock tips, a financial planner is not the place you want to go to. It is that, in fact, we don't even buy and sell individual stocks very often. Only and we certainly don't
special requests.
Yeah, and we don't include them in our portfolios. We buy ETFs, mutual funds, that type of thing. So if you're looking for stock tips, go somewhere else. Two, am I ready to follow this person's advice, or do I just want to hear what I want to hear? And we see this a lot. We see people come in and talk, have an initial meeting with us, and they start off the meeting by, here's what I've done. Was this right? And they know it wasn't right, and they want us to validate what they've done because it's done and it can't be undone. So
we've seen those in the office and on the radio.
Yes. So if you've already done something and you know it's a mistake, come to us looking for help. Great. Come to us wanting to tell you you did the right thing. We're not going to tell you that.
If you bought an annuity and you're having second thoughts, I hope it was less than about 3 weeks ago.
Number three was, do I have the discipline to stay the course? This is really our job. I mean, hand-holding for advisors is really one of the most important things that we do, making sure that you don't make a big mistake by selling out at the bottom or something like that. That's a lot of what we do. It's not the most fun part of our job, but it might be the most important part. Number four, do I have a good understanding of risk? Some people do and some people don't. We use a risk questionnaire, and sometimes people are spot on. They know exactly what their risk tolerance is, but sometimes people are very surprised. And the funny thing is they usually are surprised that they're willing to take more risk than they thought they were. They describe themselves as conservative, but once they start answering the questions, they realize that they're actually open to taking a little bit more risk than what they thought. Number five, to what extent would access to advisors' knowledge and technology improve my financial life versus doing it myself? If you're the type of person that looks at your account every day, you love looking at different options and making decisions about what to purchase, you're probably not going to work out with an advisor. You have to be willing to let go of that control. And if it's something you really enjoy, you probably won't ever let go, and you probably don't want an advisor. Now, maybe hiring hourly to get some advice on where to go, that might be a good plan for someone like that. But the do-it-yourselfer types usually don't work out with advisors. And then
they usually don't make any money either.
Oh, well, there is that. Number six is, who do I know and trust? Experts and friends who are willing to help me gain a deeper understanding of my financial life. Some people have a good support network that they can rely on to do these things instead of an advisor.
Good morning, caller. I have no name. Do you have one?
I have one.
And what would it be?
Pat in Crestview.
Hey, Pat. What's
How
up
are
today?
You?
Just wonderful. How are you?
Just fine, thanks.
What's
been
happening?
Really wet here.
Well, last night, man, I thought we were going to have to break out the canoe last night. Wow.
Yeah, I can't believe that. I want to guess at the trivia question.
Sure.
8%?
You know, it is actually 9%, but I had a plus or minus one on it, and that makes you a winner.
Well, that's super great.
Now, I have a question. Because to me, this was kind of misleading, or not even misleading. That's not the right word. It was kind of counterintuitive to me that it would be so low. I thought the presence of COVID coming into the big equation of retirement would probably do two things. One of them probably force a lot of people into not working who would rather have been working, but also thinking the old life is too short, so I had to get all the money I can.
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem like the number should have been a lot bigger than that?
It would seem that way.
I have only come up with one possible explanation, and that is that so many are already planning to go out at 62 that it couldn't have that much impact. But if you look at the stats, it's very interesting. For decades now, the 62 types have been declining as a percentage of the people that age. So I don't
really,
know for
because
sure.
I did it at 62, so.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, it makes a lot of sense, but for a lot of people, that's kind of a lifetime of punishment, too. But
right,
I just thought it was so interesting that I'd bring it up to ponder. And for whatever reason, you nailed it.
Well, that's good.
That is good.
I just guessed. It was just a guess.
Well, then your guesser is in top form, and maybe you ought to hit the casinos later on this week.
Huh? Oh, I don't know about that. Maybe.
I believe we can find you somewhere along the line. We have an address, right?
I think so. I hope so. We're getting
mail. No kidding. Thank you. I appreciate the call. Happy 4th and have a wonderful time. I know you guys are about as patriotic as people come in red, white, and blue these days. So enjoy.
Well, thank you, sir.
Enjoy the time. And Adam will send you a little something from Mr.
Okay,
Bales.
And you stay out of the way of that hurricane.
And we're going to do best.
You do the same.
You do, too. You know, the cone gets real big when it gets up that way.
So yeah, you're right.
We'll see.
Yeah, but we're just barely outside of it. Okay, well, we'll talk to you later.
Take care.
Okay.
Well, that was fun. I'm glad you got it right at the last moment. Now, did you have a wrap-up?
Under the wire. No.
There was one more question, or did you
go? No, that was it, actually.
Oh, that worked?
That was the last one.
Good. Well, man, there are a couple more things I'd like to talk about, but I'm not going to because we don't really have time. But one thing I wanted to mention here, if you want to look up something scary, look up the head of the Ford Foundation. I always think of things like that, you know, big capitalist company in a society like ours. And I think, wow, these guys have to be the real deal, right? This guy thinks capitalism has to be modified because it isn't working. I think I'll talk about that a little bit more next week. But when I hear things like that, I get very, very afraid for the future. All right, we got to run. Happy 4th, everybody. We'll see you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.